seem to look in the same places over and over.
Yeah.
That's what I was just doing for the last 15 minutes.
Did you find it?
I just found it. Way in the seat cushion of a reclining chair. Good grief. I'll tear up my apartment looking for this thing. Sorry, guys.
It's all right. We should have just started recording as soon as we called, and we could have had that story on the podcast.
I actually thought about that. I'm like, should I put this story out there in the atmosphere?
Let me tell you a secret. I've been recording for like the past like 23 seconds. Oh. So we actually got, as soon as you started telling that story, I'm like, I'm putting this on the podcast. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn. Brett Dawson here.
I am here.
Darnell Mayberry's wallet is now here.
I got it.
Found. Darnell Mayberry is also here too, y'all. Live from Chicago, I believe, correct?
Chi-town, that's it.
The Athletics own Darnell Mayberry.
I miss you guys. How y'all doing?
Former Thunder buddy. We're doing great. We haven't done one of these in a little while, so I'm feeling rusty.
Yeah. I don't even know what we're talking about. I mean, it's like almost June. Not a lot going on right now.
What are we talking about here, man?
What are we talking about?
We're talking about wallets.
Yeah.
We're obviously going to get into these playoffs and in this game we were texting about last night, the game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. We can talk about the draft if you want, Darnell, because I know you've got some interesting thoughts about that. Probably being covering the Chicago Bulls for the Athletic. But you know, we can just start with last night. What we saw out of the Warriors and the Rockets, man. I guess we predicted this at the beginning of the season, didn't we?
Didn't we all?
Didn't we all? Every person on earth.
Do you guys think, you know, women's college basketball is going through this where they're saying UConn's bad for the game because they've won so much and their dynasty. Do you think that this 4 straight times is bad for the NBA?
Well, it doesn't seem like it's bad for the NBA because the TV ratings, I get these emails every day, as I'm sure you do, where Turner and ESPN are bragging about their record ratings and their TV ratings are through the roof and it's 20% better and 38% better and whatever from a year ago. And I do think it's true that casual fans like excellence. That's been true. That's been proven in terms of TV ratings over and over and over again. Baseball ratings were good when the Yankees were great. These ratings have been good for the Warriors, even though the Warriors demolish everybody. So on that, from that standpoint, I think it's fine for your TV partners, but I don't think it's good for your product. I mean, you know, it would be okay, it would be one thing if these were great series and we were going into this thinking Cleveland's got a great chance at kind of making it 2-2 in these 4 meetings, but it doesn't feel that way. So to me, it can't be a good thing for the product, really, despite what TV numbers are going to say.
This is my argument against the product argument. We had a series earlier in the playoffs where LeBron swept the Toronto Raptors. And, you know, people have said that the playoffs haven't been good or whatever. I enjoyed every minute of LeBron sweeping the Toronto Raptors. Sure. I enjoy brilliance. I enjoy guys playing the game at the highest possible level. I enjoyed 7 step back jumpers in the face of pretty solid defense from Toronto. I enjoyed this playoffs from the standpoint that we saw teams executing at high levels. I enjoy watching Utah play really well against the Thunder. I enjoyed watching Anthony Davis, you know, play really well against Golden State, even though it was a series that, you know, didn't go all 7 games. I enjoyed the last series against Boston, even though we saw some really ugly games. I think the drama within each series makes it to where you don't necessarily have to have all of this, you know, NCAA tournament style kind of parity. Because frankly, when it gets down to the end, we want to see the most compelling matchups.
Right.
We want to see LeBron James getting tested and going up against history. We want to see him chasing history. We don't want to see the Toronto Raptors in the NBA Finals. And people can say that they want, you know, they want different teams in the finals, but I think a lot of times people say that to be contrarian. They say, okay, we don't want to see this and that. No, we want to see the Warriors get pushed by the Rockets. We want to see the Warriors go up against LeBron, even though we think the result is going to be a short series. Look, the Warriors would have been a short series against anybody. They're better than everybody else. We'll get to that later. But I've enjoyed these playoffs. I think that the product is fine. I don't think that there necessarily needs to be sweeping changes or anything. And frankly, I don't know if there are going to be any sweeping changes because, you know what? LeBron might go to Houston. So it might be even more stacked in the future. I've enjoyed the playoffs. Darnell, what have you thought?
Yeah, I'm with you, Eric. And I'm going to look at it from the finals point of view. I said to someone yesterday, these guys don't come around often. We should appreciate having the opportunity to watch LeBron James, Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson go head-to-head for all the marbles. That, to me, is basketball at its highest level. And I don't think it's going to be a great series. That's the part that I'm bummed out about is that, I do think it's going to be a sweep. Just because the Warriors are that good and the Cavs, I still don't think are very good. But, to see LeBron James, who a lot of people are starting to say is the greatest player of all time, go up against this juggernaut in the Warriors, I mean, that's going to be a riveting storyline to see how competitive he can make that Cavs team and to see his greatness on full display against a team that no one's giving him a shot to beat. So I think it's going to be entertaining from that. And then we should just enjoy the show. But I am getting, a little tired of seeing these same two teams, especially this year when no one thinks the Cavs have a shot. And that's the disappointing part to me.
Yeah, I mean, my main rooting interest in these playoffs was I did want LeBron in the finals. And I mean, I knew it was probably going to be against Golden State. So I knew this, I was rooting for this matchup because one half of it was inevitable and one half of it I wanted. Because I do want all the LeBron we can get. And I hope LeBron is in a situation, whether it's a different-looking Cleveland team or somewhere else next year, that he's competing to go to the finals again. Because I want to see LeBron for as much as we can. Because we're closer to the end than even the middle of LeBron's career. So, now LeBron being LeBron, he might be good until he's 45. But we're not at that point. We're coming toward the end, at least. And I want as much LeBron in the playoffs as we can get.
Here's the thing, Brett, in my eyes, it's sort of like the NCAA tournament argument. Everyone wants to see the upsets early, but then when you see those upsets, right, then you got, rum-dums out there playing in the Elite Eight and the, Sweet 16 or whatever. So I want to see the best players. I don't want to see the Milwaukee Bucks in the finals.
Right.
I'm sorry. Giannis is great, but, you need star power. And if you got – I mean, we've seen it. When the Pistons and the Spurs met, what was that, in 2004, 2005, whatever that was? Nobody cared.
Right.
No one cared. The Knicks, and when the Knicks made the finals, I think they played the Spurs. No one cared.
Right.
So we've seen this throughout NBA history where two teams that aren't exciting, don't have a lot of star power, maybe, don't move the needle that much, they meet up and people tune out. This time we've got, for the fourth straight time, all the star power that the finals can handle, and people are complaining.
Yeah, and look, Houston would have been fine, too, from that standpoint. Houston would have been fun. Houston versus LeBron would have been a fun series. That would have been interesting because you also still would have had that star power. But you're right in this sense, too. Like if you think like it's so important that you have parity and different teams, you don't really like this league because it's never been that way.
Yeah, and I think that you all both make good points that we got to appreciate this while we can. Yeah, you haven't even think about it from the Warriors' perspective. This Warriors team, we talk about them all being this dynasty and going on for years and years. Look, we know better than anybody. Darnell, you know better than anybody. This thing goes by quick. There was a time where people were saying that the Thunder is going to be a dominant team going back to the finals for 3-4 years in a row. The Warriors have shown you that this doesn't happen very often. The Thunder were supposed to be the Warriors, and it never happened. So I think that people need to appreciate how great the Warriors are and what they're doing and how remarkable it is. And I think that that's the perfect segue into, game 7. Now, I think before we get into anything else, we need to appreciate how good the Warriors are because, yes, the Rockets didn't have Chris Paul, but that team did not look good in the first half. They did not look like they were playing Warriors basketball. Houston was pumped. They were at home. They were amped. Harden was rolling in the pick-and-roll game with Clint Capella. Capella was dominant. They were getting all the offensive rebounds. And they're the best third-quarter team we've ever seen, the Warriors. And I have to give them their props, and people probably aren't going to want to hear it on the Thunder Buddies podcast, but God almighty, when the Avalanche starts, it's hard to stop how good the Warriors are when they get that third-quarter Avalanche going. And we need to appreciate this. We need to appreciate this as basketball fans because you're not going to see many teams like this in your lifetime.
Now that's where I sort of get off.
All right.
That's where I sort
all right,
of get
Darnell.
Off.
Here
now,
we go.
Now listen, I can appreciate the greatness of those guys individually and the talent and the skill and the hard work. I look at Kevin Durant, and I'm not going to turn this into a, you know, I understand the audience. I'm not turning this into a, you know, rail against Kevin Durant, but he works hard. Okay. He's one of the hardest working players in the world. LeBron James is up there. These guys aren't just great because they're talented. They're naturally gifted. These guys put in a lot of work. And so when I watch Kevin Durant, I do think about the work that he's put in that I've seen him put in throughout the years. And I know LeBron's that way. Steph Curry's that way. Klay Thompson and Draymond Green are also that way. But as a unit, it's hard for me to appreciate those guys when Kevin Durant is basically having isolations, you know, at all moments of the game. How many times did they throw a double team at him or send multiple bodies his way, make him play in the crowd? Like, it's just too easy for those guys. And that's where it's hard for me to really appreciate their greatness as a unit, because it is predictable and you sort of know what's coming because they just got too much firepower.
It's not hard for me to appreciate it because they've done it for four straight years. And that takes mental and physical ability and strain on your body.
Yeah,
for those
right.
guys
you're
to
right
play
that
many games, and this even precedes Kevin Durant, because for two of those years they did it without Kevin Durant. Yeah. They did it the first time as neophytes to the whole being dominant in the playoff situation, and they rolled the injured LeBron team. They do it the second time coming back from a 3-1 deficit against probably the best Thunder team there's ever been on paper. That was remarkable. We were there for that. We saw the collapse. And then they come basically a Draymond suspension from winning another title, and then they get Durant, and then they roll. So to me, I think, you know, regardless of whether or not they have the best players in the game, the players still have to go play the games and execute. Like, it's remarkable that these guys have been able to execute and come through in situations, even though they have more help than anybody else because they have these Hall of Fame players all around them. They still got to go out and execute. Like, the Rockets looked like the better team for many parts of this series, and Golden State still was able to go out and execute.
Well, one thing, 538 had a stat today that the odds of the Rockets missing as many threes as they did in a row last night, 27 Whew. Consecutive threes, 1 in 72,000 that would happen. So a little bit of good fortune for the Warriors, too. But the thing I'll say that's impressive about the Warriors, and I'm more on the Darnell end of this, in terms of appreciating them, I do appreciate them as individuals. It's weird because they were a 73-win team that got to add Kevin Durant because of a weird salary cap spike, and it's an oddity. But, like, the one thing you can say about them, like, it's pretty impressive, and maybe in the Houston series there might have been times, and you guys can – maybe you disagree with me. There look like times where there were some signs of this. But, like, just to play this long together and be this good together and not get sick of each other is something. Because, like, we've seen how hard that's been for Cleveland, you know, like – those guys got sick of each other. They've had to change the team some. They've had to move some pieces in and out. Kyrie Irving didn't want to be a part of it anymore. There's something to be said just for that part of it. And I thought there were times in Houston, and maybe I'm projecting a little bit of what fans were saying onto the actual Warriors themselves, where, like, the way Durant was playing and the way they were playing in isolation wasn't really their style of play, and maybe those pieces didn't feel like they fit great all the time sometimes. And maybe there was a little bit of fatigue about each other, and maybe there wasn't, but that's impressive not to have gotten to that point, not to get to this point where, like, everybody just wants out.
Let me say this about what was impressive to me about the Warriors last night, and this is a slight jab at Kevin Durant. When they went on their run in the third quarter, it was almost as if Kevin Durant wasn't on the floor. It was basically just Steph just going berserk. It was Steph just coming off screens off Jordan Bell. It was, you know, Steph isolated against Ryan Anderson. It was Steph in transition, and y'all can jog my memory about the defensive possessions that led to that. There were probably a bunch of missed Rockets threes because they missed 27 in a row, but that to me is what's also great and also a knock against this Warriors team. They didn't need Kevin Durant. Like, Steph closed the door on those guys last night by himself, basically, and, you know, their defense ramped up in that second half too, the same way it did in Game 6, but when Kevin Durant got going in the fourth quarter, it was almost like the game was a foregone conclusion because they had made their run And Durant did have 10 points in the third. But they had made that run on the back of Steph. And you saw how Steph's creativity in the offense and his ability to get shots and to be able to have that quick trigger three in the corner was really the difference in between them separating from Golden State. And then, you know, Durant polished him off at the end with some really nice isolation plays.
Here's a tweet from Michael Lee. He wrote a story. He's been covering the West Finals. And, you know, he's tweeting out his story and quotes from Kevin Durant within that story. And here's a quote from Durant from Michael Lee's Twitter account that he just tweeted. He says, "All stars don't matter. Accomplishments don't matter. It's about how you play on the court. That's why we never come in like we're invincible. This series showed that," end quote. That from Kevin Durant. So the Warriors, I mean, this kind of speaks to our point, or your point, Eric, is you still got to go out there and do it. And I do give them credit for that. But when you got the, you know, three of the four best players on the court, or whatever it might be, or maybe even the four best players in a series, I mean, it's sort of a foregone conclusion that you're going to win. It's just a matter of how tough you're going to make it on yourselves.
Yeah, and it's like, well, we still have to give those guys credit at the end of the day. Like we said, they still have to go out and execute. They beat a Rockets team that everybody lauded the entire year as one of the all-time great teams in NBA history, basically, in terms of their net rating and what have you, and their ability to just make threes and also defend. So when you beat a team like that, regardless of whether or not Chris Paul is there, you've got to give a team their props. For them to stay mentally focused in this game, Klay Thompson gets two fouls in the first minute of the game. You know, for them to pull themselves together after those first couple of minutes on the road, and Draymond Green go up to Kevin Durant and be like, "Yo, let's go, man." Like, I think there's something to be said about that, and I think this team deserves the same praise we're giving to LeBron James on the other side for being able to drag his team to where it's been.
I don't think they deserve the same credit because LeBron is playing with like a bucket of leftover Legos.
Now I'm going to bring up my LeBron bucket of leftover Legos theory here in a second, but continue, Brett.
But no, I think in summation, what I would say about the Warriors is, yes, they're great. We should say that they're great, but they're supposed to be great. This is a team that was built to be great. It was a team that was built to have the deck is stacked in their favor against the rest of the league. And they're doing that, and that takes something. It takes some doing. You got to actually do it. But they were supposed to do this.
You know, here's the thing about the Warriors. From the moment the story posted on the Players Tribune, July 4th, 2016, you know that celebration LeBron and those guys did down in Miami, not five, not six, did everyone hate it?
Yeah.
Well, the whole world was saying, not five, not six, not seven, about these Warriors.
Yeah.
So we all knew from the moment that story posted on the Players Tribune, July 4th, that these guys were going to win multiple championships and only injury, and injury only, was going to be able to stand in their way. And they're just fulfilling what they were supposed to do. So, you know, do you get credit for being able to do it? Sure. But when everyone expects you to do it and you do it, okay. It's like, you know, I'm a father. Chris Rock had a joke one time. People talk about, oh, I take care of all my kids. You're supposed to take care of your kids. Like, you're supposed to go and win these championships.
What, you want a cookie?
Yeah, exactly.
How do we feel about LeBron? And obviously, one of the all-time greats. I'm not going to make the MJ argument here. I just think that's.
Please don't.
Let's just wait till the dude's retired. Please, let's just wait till he's retired.
Even then, it's a cross era comparison. It's hard to do. It's not fair. They're both great.
But this is kind of a thing that I've thought a lot about with LeBron. And we always want to say LeBron doesn't have help. LeBron doesn't have help or whatever. His roster stinks. Da 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 da. It's like, okay, we do realize that like LeBron James is the GM of that team, right? As much as Kobe Altman did a great job with like making that flip at the trade deadline and getting some younger, fresher pieces in there, they're not making any moves without LeBron James' consent. You know, they sent Dwayne Wade back to Miami. That was obviously something that LeBron had to consent to as well. That's his guy. So when we talk about LeBron getting as far as he gets, when does it get to a point to where we say, well, you know, LeBron kind of put himself in some of the situations he put himself into. For instance, the Kyrie Irving situation. And I'm just gonna throw this out there because I haven't really heard a lot of people saying this. Like, the Kyrie Irving situation is one where egos needed to be massaged in regard to Kyrie. LeBron's calling him the kid. Kyrie goes another place and he wants to kind of forge his own path. Could LeBron have done something differently there in order to get Kyrie to kind of, you know, come back into the fold and be more part of this team and have him come back and play this season? Because they obviously could have used him this season. Then you win a title and you re-sign Tristan Thompson to however much they're paying him, and you re-sign J.R. Smith to $10 million per. J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson are making a combined $37 million. Those are LeBron guys who LeBron got re-signed. So how much of this LeBron doesn't have the team that these other guys have should really be like, yeah, he does, but at the same time, there's a little bit of, you know, LeBron rub off on somebody. And it doesn't make what he's doing any more remarkable. It's just this isn't being mentioned. These things aren't being mentioned along the way.
Well, it's interesting you would say this. My friend Brian, who's the biggest LeBron hater on the planet, makes all the same cases you just made. So you've now aligned yourself with the biggest LeBron hater I know.
Congrats.
I am not a LeBron hater. I'm just the farther it goes, I'm like, man, like, and look, I'm the first guy on the text chain to be like, he played 48 minutes. Like, who is playing 48 minutes at these playoffs at this level? It's unbelievable. He's the greatest thing we've seen in this generation. I love LeBron. I defended LeBron post decision because he owed nothing to Cleveland at that point. He owed nothing to the state of Ohio at that point, and free agency is every man's right. He had a right to pursue a title elsewhere. And for him to do it on national TV, I thought was him actually sitting down and owning it face-to-face as opposed to writing a letter. He was ahead of the curve in that regard to me. Every time LeBron has made a free agency decision, he's owned it. He sat down with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and those guys and said, look, I'm leaving. He sat down with at the Boys and Girls Club and said, I'm going to take my talents. I've defended him for all that stuff. I just think that this situation is like, okay, LeBron kind of made the team he's on. I mean, he made this team.
I mean, there's an argument to be made that, like, I mean, it's not like LeBron wouldn't like to get Kevin Durant. There's only so much they could do to fix some of these pieces. Now, the Tristan Thompson contract is one of the really good ones that you can sort of point to and say, like, LeBron wanted that guy, and that contract has hamstrung them a little bit. But it's not like LeBron wouldn't like some better pieces. The big move they made at the deadline was the best they could hope to do, and it was, you know, maybe it was good, maybe it really wasn't that good, but I think they had to get Isaiah Thomas out of there. You know, if LeBron's not supposed to be the GM, so maybe he's not a very good GM. I mean, that's fair, but that's not really his job. I get the argument that he has sort of signed off on all the moves they've made, but there's still a limit to what you can do. There's still a limit to how good a team you can build. And the Warriors have a great team that they got to add Kevin Durant to. If he could be in that situation, I'm sure he would like to be.
Yeah. Darnell, you eating soup?
I don't disagree with anything you guys are saying. And what I'm actually sitting here doing is going back and looking up, because to your point, Eric, I don't think this is the first time that LeBron has constructed a roster and it's fallen miserably short. Or at least, you know, I mean, they're in the finals, so you can't say that this roster has fallen short, but they've struggled mightily throughout the season. With the first incarnation of this roster and this version of it. So
yeah.
You go back to, you know, he got Larry Hughes in there way back when. He had Ben Wallace in there. They brought in Shaq. Like, they made one short-sighted move after another. I mean, all of these moves that led to him not having young players to build around and forced him to feel like he had to leave the Cavs the first time to go to Miami. That was the product of one short-sighted move after another by the Cavs. And I think, you know, I'm not saying this definitively, but I think LeBron had a hand in many of those moves as well. So this isn't the first time. And I do agree with you. You know, no one really talks about how he pulls the strings in that organization and controls a lot of the roster moves. But, you know, you can't take away anything from his greatness, man. I mean, the guy is an incredible player.
Yeah, and the point I was trying to make, and I probably didn't make it very well, you're probably right about all that stuff. And yet, when they did all that, like when they got Shaq and all that, they wanted to get Amari Stoudemire. They just couldn't do it. They tried. They just couldn't pull it off. So, like,
yeah,
they tried to be better. They just failed at putting better rosters around him, and this is what they kind of ended up with. But it's not like he wouldn't have signed off on some better pieces. They just couldn't get him.
And look, props to LeBron in this regard. You know, they get the Kevin Love deal done, and they trade the number one pick, and they get Andrew Wiggins to Minnesota. or they draft Andrew Wiggins and then get him to Minnesota as part of the deal that brings him back to get Kevin Love to Cleveland. I think that's worked out for Cleveland. They end up winning a title with Andrew with Kevin Love, and who knows if you win a title with Andrew Wiggins. Maybe Andrew Wiggins develops into a better player around LeBron. I'm not sure, but right now Andrew Wiggins is on a track where people are generally disappointed with where he is as a player. And I think that you've gotten good value out of Kevin Love for the most part. You got a championship out of it.
Yeah, the guys I was thinking about, Larry Hughes, Ben Wallace, Mo Williams, Antoine Jameson, and Shaq. You know, those five guys, you know, if I'm not mistaken, LeBron had a hand in bringing most of those guys to Cleveland, and hardly any of them worked out. So, you know, this isn't the first time.
And it won't be the last, wherever he ends up. Where's LeBron going next season? Is he going anywhere?
People keep talking about Philly. I don't see that.
I don't either.
I don't see that at all. He just doesn't fit. Ben Simmons needs the ball. You got to get Joel Embiid the ball, whether on the block or on the perimeter. LeBron would go in there, and I just don't think that's a fit whatsoever, unless he does what, you know, Chris Paul did a little bit, you know, to a large degree this season and let someone else handle the ball. But I don't think LeBron is LeBron if he does that. So I don't think Philly is an option, frankly.
I know if I'm Ben Simmons sitting in Philly, I don't want it. I mean, I don't want him there. He does the stuff you do, and he's older, but he's better at it. And that's a weird situation. Somebody has to change their game, and that seems like a weird fit.
I wonder, from this standpoint, if you could have the drastic staggers we saw from James Harden and Chris Paul at times this season with guys like Ben Simmons and LeBron James. Like, they start together, but then you have the staggers so drastic to where they're almost not on the floor together for most of the game until like the end of the game, basically.
Maybe.
Well, my question about his fit with the Rockets is, does he fit? You know, there's something to be said for collecting a lot of talent and giving yourselves a chance against a team like the Warriors, but you know, how would that work? You got Chris Paul and James Harden, who like to do their thing, and we're seeing all the isolations that they like to run and pound the ball, you know, dribble, dribble, dribble. If they're doing that, LeBron's just standing on the perimeter in the corner waiting for a three, and he's not a great three-point shooter. Like, how does that work? I don't know if that's the best fit. But if you get into a series with the Warriors, which they would if they got LeBron, they're going to make it to the conference finals again and probably face the Warriors next season. Then I think you give yourselves a better chance just from his ability to do everything on the floor. But I just don't know if that's the best fit, because one of those guys is going to be essentially Trevor Ariza sitting out there.
Yeah, I weirdly like the idea of LeBron with one of those guys more than LeBron with two of those guys. Like,
good point. Yeah,
LeBron
yeah.
with James Harden or LeBron with Chris Paul, I could see that. But right. like all three of them, I'm not sure.
But to me, I think that Chris Paul really did a lot for his legacy this season from the standpoint of, we had so many questions about the Chris Paul James Harden fit going into the season, and Chris Paul proved himself to be such a wonderful fit and some.
You know the difference
in that
there?
Regard.
Here's the difference. LeBron's got three championships. Chris Paul had never made the conference finals. He had to sacrifice something. He had to say, okay, my way isn't working. I'm getting older. I'm running out of time. I got to change my game. LeBron, his way has worked for 14 years. So 15 years. So I don't see him sacrificing like Chris Paul did.
Well, you see Chris Paul sacrificing again? Or how about James Harden?
You mean with each other or with the potential of LeBron coming?
With the potential of LeBron, because that would obviously have to be done, because those guys wouldn't have the ball in their hands as much if they're playing together.
Well, here's the thing. I just said Chris Paul, his way hadn't worked. It's almost time we start talking about James Harden.
Oh, it's time.
you know, great regular season player, but every postseason it seems like he throws up some of these duds, and he's just not good enough. Now, I'm not going to knock him for not getting past the Warriors, especially without Chris Paul for game 7. You know, that would just be ridiculous. But maybe James Harden gets to a point where he says, look, I need a little bit more help. You know, I can't do this alone, and this is really tough. So come on, LeBron. I don't know. Maybe he makes that choice.
Well, it's kind of the thing we talk about with Russell Westbrook. It's not a complete overhaul of your game. And Brett, you wrote about this for our season ending review. It's not a complete overhaul of your game. It's just giving up a little bit of control. It's giving up a little bit of your game, or giving up a couple of shots, or a couple of passes, or a couple of dribbles here. I think Zach Lowe wrote about this really well when the Thunder exited the playoffs. Like, 5 shots a game from Russell Westbrook. And look, I don't know if that's necessarily the formula. I've looked up the numbers before, and the Thunder was like some absurd number the season prior when Westbrook took 18 shots or less. And look, that all comes with context.
Yeah,
weird context because sometimes you're blowing a team out.
Right.
Sometimes everybody else is making their shots. But are we to the point where you need to look at James Harden's game? And as you said, Darnell, you know, brilliant regular season player, but you have to be able to make those alterations in the postseason, particularly against a Warriors team that's really good defensively and offensively, to where you're not dribbling the ball for 12 seconds and then going into your offense. You're getting a little bit different variation from your offense, and you're getting some different shots, and you're getting some different production. I think that goes for Westbrook too.
I mean, the other thing to think about with Harden is he has all the individual accolades. He's about to be named MVP. He's 1 of 6 man. He's been the leading scorer. He's got a super mega endorsement deal with Adidas. He's got a super max contract with the Rockets. He's got nothing else to play for or prove other than a championship. So if I'm him, sure. You know, it's probably a little easier to make that step, take a step back. But at the same time, man, I mean, that's hard when you're the man and someone else comes in, and LeBron has a dominant personality.
Yeah.
And James doesn't. He's grown into a little bit more of one, but Chris Paul has a dominant personality. So that would sort of become LeBron and Chris Paul's, I'm not going to say their team, but their personalities would probably preside over that team more than James Harden's. And I don't know if he's quite ready to give up that that responsibility and that ownership that he has.
You know where LeBron should go? You know where he fits and elevates a team?
Chicago.
No.
New Orleans, Louisiana.
He'd be fantastic in New Orleans.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense. It's just, man, I mean, the guy plays in Cleveland. It's not like New Orleans is a major media market, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean,
on that team.
In terms of, like, you talk about his persona, the fact that he's like an outsized personality, doesn't matter. Davis isn't. They don't really have a guy on that team who is. He would fit that well. Now, like in this scenario, Boogie walks, obviously, because you can't, I don't think financially you could work that out. But like you're building a team around, like, you got LeBron and Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday. Like, that's a real nice thing you got going there.
Or you work out a similar situation to what the Clippers did with the Rockets, where you have LeBron opt into the final year of his deal, play for that 1 year, and then you make a trade in order to get Boogie to Cleveland.
Right. Yeah.
Something like that. I've never thought about New Orleans until you just brought it up, Brett. It's an interesting thought.
Guys.
He's in the West, though. He'd be in the West. Go ahead.
Well, that's a good point. I was going to say we're kind of making the case for the Lakers with another guy who I won't mention because I don't want my mentions to be ruined today.
Go ahead, say it.
Oh, you can say it.
I don't want to say it. But, you know, the PG, Pau Gasol.
Oh my God! Go, hey, Brett, look up Pau Gasol's money over the next couple years, and prepare your computer to set on fire. I think he's at 16 per. Go ahead, Darnell. I'm sorry, man.
No, I'm just saying. He could go west. I don't think that would be the best option. I don't think he will because he knows he's got it made in the East, which is another storyline that I think doesn't get enough attention. People talk about it, but I don't think it gets enough attention. The easy road that he's had for the majority of his career playing in the East. So I don't think he's going to leave the East. And I hope to God he doesn't come to Chicago because I don't want those problems. frankly, I like to watch him from afar and enjoy him. I don't want to have to, you know, have my life ruined for the next however long. I don't know, guys. It's going to be interesting, though. I mean, the guy's going to really, wherever he goes, make whatever team he joins an instant championship contender, and the Cavs are going to be probably have the number one pick as soon as he leaves. So I don't know. It's fascinating. He's fascinating.
What percentage chances are dumb? But like, do you see a scenario where he's just still in Cleveland? Because I do.
Not with this roster. No, I don't think he wants to drag these guys up and down the court again at 34, 35 years old, whatever he is going to be next year. So I don't.
I just wonder about a scenario where that their pick and something else, and maybe they make some moves. The idea, I don't think, like, this, to go full circle on this LeBron conversation, I do think he enjoys being in a place where he does have that kind of power. I think he's always liked kind of calling the shots. There was a lot reported about, you know, the sort of culture in Miami was such that he didn't get to run things exactly his way. He didn't get to bring everybody to the game and sit them where he wanted to sit them in the same ways that he can in Cleveland. And so getting away from that, I think, is a little bit challenging. And so there is a part of me that thinks there may be some piece of LeBron that wants to stay there, but it would have to be under dramatically different circumstances, obviously.
And look, maybe he does something out of left field like he did in 2010. Was that 2010 or 20? That was 2010, right?
2010.
Yeah, so maybe he does something like that again. Maybe he forms another super team of some kind. I don't know if it's going to be enough to beat the Warriors, but he stays in the East. He's got Kristaps Porzingis in New York. I don't know what the Knicks books look like. They got Joakim Noah that they got to get rid of. But, you know, maybe he forms another super team in New York. He's always raved about playing in the Garden. Who doesn't? But he's always had an affinity for playing in New York and the Knicks and, you know, everything that comes with that. So
loves Fizdale.
There you go. But the Knicks could be a dark horse team.
I don't know about the money thing there. And then the fact that Porzingis may not even play and certainly probably won't play for the first half of the year.
Yeah,
but staying in the East doesn't really matter. I mean, you can tread water for the first however many games, and then once you get your horses together, I mean, I remember being in the Cleveland media room and hearing so many people just trashing that team when the Thunder blew them out in January. I mean, the Thunder blew the doors off of that team pre trade deadline, and just talking about how, you know, certain people needed to go and this and that, and then you look up and LeBron covers your warts, man. You're in the finals. So the Cleveland's a long way from what they were mid-season in terms of just the result. I mean, there's still some of the team with some of the same deficiencies. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that LeBron couldn't do the same thing for a team like New York or anywhere he wanted to go in the East.
We saw them right after the trade. It was like their second or third game after the big overhaul trade. They were here and they won. And that's when they got off that really hot start right after the trade. They played great. And that's when you thought, wow, they might really have an easy time getting to the finals. Like, maybe this is going to work. And then you fast forward a couple of months, and, like, Rodney Hood is a non-person. It's so
he's
weird.
He's refusing to come off the bench.
Yeah, it's just been a weird change since the middle of the season.
Brad, I think you bring up an interesting angle about the potential of staying in Cleveland. You know, they do have the 8th overall pick. Maybe they can go out and get a veteran for that pick. And then, you know, some players who aren't fitting on the roster currently, perhaps maybe they trade some of those guys and get some better pieces or pieces that fit better, I should say.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is interesting, but I don't see him wanting to reboot all over again, you know, for the third time in, you know, how many months and then go back at it. So, I think he's going to try to find an easier route, sort of like someone else did 2 years ago.
Okay. That fella.
Yeah, him.
With the ease. Oh, man. Let's make some quick finals predictions. Darnell, you gave yours on Twitter last night.
Yeah, Warriors in four. This is a short conversation. Warriors in four.
I'm going to go 5. I'll give LeBron 1 at home. I'll give him that respect. And look, frankly, some of these guys are due to make some shots. JR's been awful. You know, George Hill hasn't made a ton of shots. He's been okay. You know, Kevin Love, they could get Kevin Love back for, you know, by the time they get back to you'd expect them to be back by the time they at least get back to Cleveland. I mean, I don't know about these first couple of games because concussion protocol is kind of a tricky thing. But
especially for that guy,
I think Kevin Love is a interesting matchup for them, and he can cause Cleveland some problems, particularly if Tristan's like in playing well in the role game, and LeBron can find him in the role game. You know, Kevin Love can stretch them out a little bit and give them some problems. So I'll give them one game, but otherwise, we've seen this movie.
Well, I'm going to have to agree with one of you because I can't, as a reasonable person, go six. I'll say five. You know, if Iguodala is healthy, the sweep thing wouldn't surprise me at all. If he's not, I think LeBron will find a way to get a game. I think.
Here's the schedule sets up where there are two days off in between each game, except for games 3 and 4, I believe. So who do you guys think that favors? The Warriors, who kind of just went through this, well, both teams just went through a knockdown, drag out series, but the Warriors, who've got these shooters that, you know, they're fresh and they've got their legs, they're going to put a lot of pressure on you, or the Cavs, who can make adjustments and kind of, you know, use that rest to their advantage in various ways. Who do you think that favors more?
I think LeBron needs rest more than anybody else in the series, so I would say that favors Cleveland. That's probably not enough to make a big difference, but that would be my initial thought.
Yeah, the more days for LeBron, I think, to heal and rest, the better. So I think that would favor LeBron just to get his body healed up. Now, look, they might score upset in game two and want to come out and play and just be like, let's go. We don't want to sit around. We want to play. If they somehow come out and play well in two, then it might be an advantage for them to get back on the court as soon as possible. But I think, you know, otherwise you want LeBron to have as many days as possible. And then you know, you need that stretch of days in between games to, if Kevin Love doesn't play in game one, to give him more time to get back on the court too.
Yeah, I don't see this being much of a series. Sorry. I mean, we saw also how Kevin Durant dominated last year.
Yep.
That was really the turning point for him in terms of, I mean, it helps who he's playing with, but he had this ghost of LeBron James that he couldn't overcome. And last year he exorcised those demons. And now I think he's on another level and he's not intimidated. He's not going to back down. He's going to go right at LeBron. And LeBron doesn't have an answer for Durant anymore. He might be able to match him offensively, but he cannot stop him defensively. So, you know, someone said, I think it was J.A. Adande, who said he's not ready to hand the Larry O'Brien trophy to the Warriors just yet because Andre Iguodala's health is in question. And he's going to be the one who guards LeBron and has successfully in the past. He's the reason, you know, that's the reason he won the finals MVP in, what was that, 2015?
Yeah, I was 15.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, that is a factor, but it's not enough of a factor to keep the Cavs in this series, I don't think. So, you know, I just think that the Warriors have way too much, and the fact that they don't have an answer whatsoever, like Jeff Green on Kevin Durant, come on, man. He couldn't guard him in practice back in 2008. Yeah. How's he going to guard him now in the finals?
I keep trying to think of who – I mean, it's going to have to be LeBron, but you're going to have to put LeBron on other guys. I think you're going to have to put LeBron on Steph sometimes. I mean, there's just not enough. There aren't enough defenders on Cleveland, who is not a good defensive team, to be able to think that they're going to be able to compete with the Warriors for past five games.
And the more LeBron has to do defensively, the more that's going to take out of him offensively, and they need him on both ends. And as great as he is, I don't think he's capable of that.
Not many teams are. I mean, you know, we saw what it did to a guy like Donovan Mitchell. Like, I mean, LeBron and Donovan Mitchell's great, but, you know, it's taxing. It's taxing. Thunder don't have any draft picks, Darnell, except for their 2 second rounders. Chicago's got a draft pick. Who are they going to pick, Darnell?
Oh, I think it depends on who falls. The Bulls fans really love Michael Porter Jr. I wrote a thing recently just saying Michael Porter Jr. loves him some Michael Porter Jr. And you put him with Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen. You've got four guys all under the age of 20 or 24 or younger. I think that's a recipe for disaster potentially when you've got guys who think as highly of themselves as some of those guys do. So I don't see them drafting Michael Porter Jr. even if he's there. Maybe they take him and try to, you know, trade him. But, you know, Trey Young is a guy who's got mentioned that Bulls fans do not like him. They fell off his bandwagon for whatever reason. I think the guy that they're going to draft is either Wendell Carter Jr. or Mikal Bridges.
Bridges.
I mean, and I was saying this to Eric the other day on the phone. I think I was telling you this, Eric. But, Brett, I was saying this the other day. The Bulls were awful all season. They traded Jimmy Butler. They sucked intentionally, and they come away with Mikal Bridges. Like, that's your big – I mean, yeah. It's a big disappointment if that's how it plays out. But
yeah, I like him, but I agree in the sense that, like, I like him on a good team, like, a lot.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like, he would be great on the Thunder.
Right.
Are we sure about that?
yes, because he's not the type of guy who needs the ball. And
right. He's a good catch-and-shoot guy.
He's a glue guy. You know, he's going to defend and, you know, cut and do the little things. I think, I mean, I'm not going to put him in the Andre Robertson league, but not as a defender, but I think he can do the little things like an Andre Robertson does and won't complain about his role.
Yeah, and projects as a much better offensive player just because of the way he can shoot the ball.
Right.
Yeah, those make sense. You've watched a ton, so like, who do you love in the draft?
Oh, I'm trying to go through the guys: Aiden, Doncic, Jaren Jackson Jr. I love him. I think he's going to be a stud. Marvin Bagley. Who else is out there? Porter Young, Bamba. I think Jaren Jackson could be one of the best players from this class. You know, everyone's talking about Aiden and Doncic. I'm not, you know, I haven't seen any of Doncic. I don't know what he's going to be. I'd be scared to take him, thinking he's going to be, you know, this superstar. I think he's going to be a solid player probably, but Jaren Jackson, I just love his physical attributes, his makeup. He doesn't need the ball to have an impact. He projects as a great defensive player, so I think he's going to make whatever team he goes to a really good team in the future. So he'd be probably one of my favorite guys.
He's young. He's like one of the youngest guys in the draft, too. I think he's like maybe 18.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be a good one, I think.
Well, you enjoy covering Michael Porter Jr., Darnell. That's going to be fun with him and – You know, maybe they draft his brother in the second round. I don't know. Maybe he can have his brother around.
You know who I really like, Brett? I think we've talked about this in the past. Those Kentucky guys, man, for some reason, I just have a weird, irrational love of Kentucky guys.
I am not crazy about Knox, but I am really interested in Gilgeous Alexander as a dude. He's an interesting guy. He's not a great athlete, but he's really fluid, and he kind of gets to his spots. So I like a lot about him. I'm not – if Knox turns out to be good, I'll admit I was wrong. I'm not a big Knox guy.
I don't know why he's not getting more buzz. And actually, you know, John Calipari was at the Combine, and he, you know, he just – Brett, you know how he does. He'll just stop and start talking and, you know, won't stop talking. And I asked him why he's why he's not getting more consideration as a top 10 pick, because I loved him. I think he has questions about his motor that – are very real. He has a tendency to drift or, if not, disappear at times in games. But he's young, and that was Coach Cal's answer. You know, he's young. I'm like, that's BS, Coach. Like, all of these guys are young.
They love young guys, actually. Like, teams typically want the guy that's younger than those guys in the class.
Right. But something, I mean, the guy is like 6'9". You know, he can shoot it. He can put it on the floor. He's got a lot of length. He's not a great defender, but he can keep up with you and use his length to make it tough. So I like his tools, and I just don't know why some of these guys, like Miles Bridges, for example, is projected to go ahead of him. I would not pick Miles Bridges ahead of Kevin Knox.
Well, I think that Kevin Knox has upside from a physical standpoint too, because he's a taller guy. He's a taller guy than Miles Bridges, and his body's not fully developed yet. I think that once they get him in like an actual NBA program and you get that baby fat off of him, he's going to turn into a pretty solid player. He kind of reminds me. I haven't watched his game enough to say he reminds me of Gordon Hayward in terms of his game, but like the physical profile, Gordon Hayward looked like this kid who wasn't ready for the NBA. Kevin Knox is bigger than Gordon Hayward when he came out, but he doesn't look fit yet. Once he gets into the NBA and he gets fit, I think you're going to see another notch to his game. You're going to see a different level of player.
I'll say this. Speaking of the Kentucky guys, this is based on no inside information, but just based on profile, I cannot imagine that the Thunder does not love Jared Vanderbilt from Kentucky. They almost certainly would.
That's
have
the kid
to
who didn't
him.
Play, huh?
He was hurt most of the year. And the injury thing is real and scary, and he may not stay in the draft. I think they still have a day or two to decide on that.
I think it's today. It's today.
I was going to say it's either today or tomorrow, I wanted to say. So, yeah, so we'll know soon. But he's just an incredible – he's a great athlete and this raging motor. He plays so hard and just an out-of-this-world rebounder. His like, his per-minute rebound rate, his rebounding rates, his percentages – are just off the charts. He's a dude that would fit great if he was healthy. Now, whether he's going to be available that low in the draft, I don't know. But you talk about a guy who he plays so hard, he plays with such great energy, he plays good defense, he rebounds, and he can't shoot. It's like, come on.
He can't shoot. That's what I was going to ask you. Can he shoot?
Nope.
If he can't,
Thunder would love him.
Thunder would love him. Love to add a non-shooter.
Yep, can't shoot a lick. Terrible shooter. Great finisher, bad shooter.
Oh, man. Can Diallo shoot from Kentucky?
No, not at all.
There's another guy.
Bad shooter.
Athletic.
Yeah, he is a crazy athlete.
Darnell, you got any final thoughts?
Miss you guys.
Oh, man, that touches my heart.
We miss you, too. It's not the same in the office. These conversations that we just recorded are used to happen all the time in the office.
It's a sad day.
We'll get back together soon. We'll get back and celebrate the Warriors championship in a couple of weeks.
I ain't celebrating that.
We'll get back together and celebrate Paul George re-signing with the Thunder. Yeah. We'll do that.
Conviction, Eric said that with. Not very
I
much
hope
conviction.
So. I'm rooting for it.
We'll get back together and celebrate Paul George re-signing with the Thunder?
Yeah, that's fair.
That was better, right? That was better, right? Now I hope he comes back, man. He was fun to watch and fun to cover. So that'd be cool to get him.
Also,
back.
The outlook is kind of bleak if he doesn't. So things are weird looking if he goes somewhere else.
I messed up. Let me correct myself, guys. The NBA draft early entry withdrawal date is June 11th. So it's not today.
Oh,
it's today? A couple weeks.
I thought there was something today. Is there the college deadline today or something? The colleges have a different deadline.
Maybe that's something. I don't know. But the NBA says on their key dates, the early entry withdrawal deadline is 4 o'clock Central on June 11th.
I think the NCAA also has a deadline, and that is earlier.
You would think that the deadline would be the same.
It's not.
Think that the draft deadline, the withdrawal deadline, would be before 10 days prior to the draft.
Yeah, the guys I think that mostly impacts are the international guys who choose not to enter it, who wind up pulling back. I think they're more impacted by that June 11th one. That's the drop-dead date, but I think the NCAA has a date that says, like, to be eligible to come back. And there's a way to sort of fudge that one, but I do think they have a deadline that is in the next couple of days. And that's I don't know the college basketball calendar like I used to, but I do think that's coming up.
Gotcha.
All right, friends. I know this wasn't a super thundery podcast, but frankly, the Thunder's not playing basketball right now. And
NBA Buddies.
NBA Buddies podcast. We'll change back to the Thunder Buddies podcast next time we get on. But we appreciate y'all listening, subscribing. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Share it with your friends, your grandparents, everybody possible. Share with Darnell Bayberry's friends and grandparents and his colleagues at The Athletic. They do great work. And Darnell, thanks again for joining us. Hopefully we'll speak to you soon.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Darnell.
And thank you for listening, and we will see you later.